first of all, when Peter asked me to come up and give a talk for you folks, I said, "Oh, Peter, I'm your wrong guy. I'm not a mathematician. I'm an end user. I'm an analyst. I'm a computer scientist by trade. And I spent most of my career in visualization, trying to use the results of mathematics such that people can actually visualize and interact with it." So that's what I'm going to be talking about. Within the last 3 years, we have started a new line of thinking. It may end up being a new area in science. I don't know, it's too early to predict that. Some people are saying it's already there. But I'd like to share that. I'd like to see if I can encourage you to think along some of these lines in order to help us do this. There's several new programs, including new funding program opportunities available for you today. If you go out on the NSF website and you look at the program of FDOVA, Foundations for Data and Visual Analytics, that program right now is being partially funded by what you're about to hear about in terms of this area. So what I'd like to discuss today is first some definitions of why visual analytics, show you a little video, and talk a little bit about why it's different, why our current technologies won't do what we needed to do. Talk about the history of science that led us into this line of thinking, some of the new requirements in the digital universe. And I'd like to calibrate you on the number and the amount of information that I have to deal with on a daily basis, which is the equivalent of about 3,000 to 5,000 science articles per day. And I have to analyze that in 4 hours or less. I have to determine what are the key themes, what's missing, what changes might be in there, and human lives are at stake. Okay, so that's kind of the framework by which I have to work on within. Okay, then I'll show you a state of practice tool that we've developed. We've been working on this. It's a well-publicized tool, so the mathematics are out there, and I'll give you the references for that. My intention was not to show you formulas, but to show you how the tool is being used. Okay, so it'll be a little different type of a presentation. This is only an example. What I'm hoping is that you folks and many others around the community, around these other research organizations, will invent some new tools in order to be able to help us do this. In the stage of doing this, we've been able to create, I lead 6 research centers now around the U.S. There's going to be 1 established in Europe. There's going to be 2 to 5 established in Canada. There's 1 in Australia. There's 1 in New Zealand. Most of them, gladly, I'm not leading. I am leading the 6 here in the U.S. for now. And we're forming a large international collaboration to work on this area of science. And I'll show you some of the new science that's coming out that the folks are working on. First of all, when I've had to present before Congress, I've got 2 definitions here of visuals and analytics. When I had to testify on what the science was all about, visual analytics provides the last 12 inches between the masses of information and the human mind to make decisions. That's a definition that the congressional folks could understand. We scientists, when I put together a team of about 40 scientists to help define this area of science, came up with the topic visual analytics, or the definition. Visual analytics is the science of analytical reasoning. Probably the most important phrase that you'll hear, the science of analytical reasoning. How is it that when we're faced with this large amounts of information that our mind works? How can we stimulate our mind to be more effective reasoners? That's what this is. That's what this is all about. And to give you a hint here, probably a third of the money that I get, which is a reasonable amount, but a third of the money I get, I fund mathematicians and statisticians. You're a key part of the solution space here, so I'm really hoping to solicit your input here.
The big challenge faced by DHS and many organizations is the massive amounts of complex data that's streaming into these organizations. And there's really no better way to deal with that data, to understand the data, to discover important relationships between pieces of data than visual analytics. Visual analytics is the key technology, I think, that we need to really make sense and understand all this information. I've been doing visualization for 20 years, and what's really exciting about this particular time is I think we're going to be able to bring visualization into a whole other level of usefulness. And so I've been working in graphics for a long time, and this really is one of the most exciting developments in my time.
It will enable the people who need to get information to get that information and to be able to make decisions using that information. And those people include not only analysts who have long-term views or strategic views, but includes the Border Patrol agents who have to deal with information or incidents that occur at a border to deal with it on an immediate tactical basis. The visualization aspects allow individuals to interact with this massive, disparate set of data in ways that allow them to see multiple types of connections, to see multiple types of relevancies among those data entities, and to see them all in one place, in one time, as opposed to doing it linearly or serially or one after the other.
Well, actually, you can see a history of where we all started, or a lot of us in this community started in scientific visualization. We're working mostly with these nice science numbers, had good science foundation. Then we went into information visualization, where we were dealing with abstract information spaces. The reason that neither of these are addressing these is now we need to get into the decision sciences, the analytical sciences. How do we actually make decisions when we're posed with all of this information? That requires different disciplines that are traditionally involved in these two core sciences. It involves decision sciences, cognitive and perceptual scientists on a whole different degree, but it also involves the database of folks and the knowledge engineering folks. How do you represent information? How do you build knowledge structures that can then be used in order to make decisions based upon these structures? So it's a much broader science agenda. So you'll see a lot more interdisciplinary teaming, actually interdisciplinary. This is going to be a contact sport, if you will, in terms of being able to do this. And so we don't want to do this separate from these other communities. What we want to do is engage these other communities in order to do this. If I were to summarize the key impact here, is this science and technology will have an enormous impact on how all of us deal with masses of information. Its time has come. Now is the right time to do it. We've used the phrase detecting the expected and discovering the unexpected. That's really what we all want to do with our information spaces. We want to discover what we think is in there. We want to detect what we think is in there. But also we want our information spaces to give us the clues that we can discover what may not be in our information spaces and give us that degree of insight. And that's what this is all about. It's all about visual analytics and insight.
Well, I think there's a couple of things we'll make a lot of progress in. One will be just understanding the problem better and developing basic principles that let us deploy systems cheaply, reliably. Basically, we need to have engineering infrastructure so we can respond to new challenges as they occur. The second thing is I think we'll develop a bunch of practical systems that people will be able to use. I mean, they'll be deployed rapidly, I think. I think the technology is almost ready to go in many instances. And I can see these systems just being deployed in many different areas of DHS.
In 5 years, I envision not an NVAC, but I envision a consortium of nationwide, or if not even nationwide, global activity in visualization and analytics. I envision a consortium of individuals, of institutions, of government agencies that are all working toward developing visual analytics, science, and technologies. That's the goal of this activity for S&T. Is to create that foundational base on which a worldwide effort in visual analytics can be sustained.
Yeah, that's a good introduction to visual analytics. We already went through a little bit of the history in terms of I've been involved with graphics. Most of my career started at General Motors. We developed CAD/CAM systems trying to get people to use small displays. I went into the scientific visualization, then the information visualization, And for those of you who are interested in competitive intelligence and the analysis of patents, I'd highly recommend that you read this book. It talks about how some of the early visual analytics was used to discover hidden characteristics of patents. And I work with industry on a regular basis. Just last week I was in England with a company called Unilever. I think they're the second largest provider of home products, all your soaps and everything. They've got a keen interest in how to do competitive intelligence using lots of data. And it's very similar to what we did here. This book covers some of the work we did with Dow Chemical. Let's talk about a little bit about what's different about this problem. See, you get a feel for why we have to change our thinking. Okay, here's I'll use mostly homeland security applications. I hope this doesn't offend anybody. I can also give a very similar talk in biology and human health, and I've done this for the National Science Foundation as a distinguished lecturer in order to get this whole area started. And you'll also notice in this call that just came out from NSF that Homeland Security is only one of five different topics that are listed, including biology and human health. And I was just talking with this gentleman here, and I'm absolutely convinced that this is much broader. But I'll use examples from Homeland Security because that's where, quite frankly, most of my funding is coming from today. Okay, so we've all done this. So within Homeland Security, these are just a few of the challenges that we have. These are entry points into the U.S. Each of these are being instrumented such that when you go in and out of the U.S., either on foot, going from an airplane or a car, it's all being instrumented. If you drive through, you'll see these portal monitors. Okay, you've probably seen these little yellow pillars right here. These are radiation sensors right now. In the future, they'll be biological and explosive sensors. It's collecting a huge amount of data on a daily basis, actually on an hourly basis. And people have to make decisions within 6 seconds. Otherwise, you're going to be delayed at the border. And this is not a good picture, as some of you have experienced if you've had delays going across the border. We're generating masses of information. This is a relatively small amount of information to compare what we're getting from other sources. And one of the applications I have running today, I collect 200 million bits of information, 200 million units of information per day, and we're trying to do analysis on that scale of information, 200 million items of information per day. Okay, so you got to kind of rethink how you're going to do things. Well, just out in the public, if you look at what's going on in the digital universe, you know, in 2002, you know, the amount of electronic information that was generated was about 22 exabytes. 2006, the amount that was generated and created was about 161 exabytes. And this number is going up, as you can clearly see, as where the trend is going, the amount of information that is being generated. Well, let's take a look at characteristics of this. This might surprise you. It did me a little bit. By the way, there are several websites out here that I'm going to reference where people are producing these predictions. 70% of the universe, or 70% of this digital universe, is going to be produced by individuals. It's not going to be produced by instruments. And if you take a look at all of our kids, you know, 80 to 90% of our kids have MySpace. You know, they're all got digital cameras that we're all collecting information from. This is going to be a trend where 70% of the information is going to be out there. Its quality is going to be questionable. And so the whole issue of uncertainty and data quality is going to be a fundamental question that we're all going to have to deal with. And the growth is uneven worldwide. And I have good information in terms of where worldwide the information is going to be coming from. The kinds of data, this first, you know, about 2 gigabytes of digital information is produced per person per year. I do that in a day. This presentation is almost 2 gigabytes. So there's a lot more than that. And this next one is probably one of the key points, and especially related to David's talk just earlier, is the digital, 95% of the information is going to be unstructured. Text is a key fundamental issue. And I've been working in text analytics now for 20 years, and I think we're just scratching the surface in terms of knowing how to deal with this amount of text and how to deal with it, the different foreign languages and different cultures and how we communicate back and forth. And I'm going to share some of my experiences so far, but I think that's a key challenge for us in the coming years. And the way we interact with our computer systems today, I just gave this talk over in Germany, where there'll be a paper that will come out of it. that you know, our how we interact with our information today is mostly by individual items. It's by groups. It's by folders. Most users, it assumes that you know what you're doing when you do these Boolean searches, and we're going to talk a little bit about what you get out of Boolean searches and what you don't get out of Boolean searches, why I've been misled using Boolean searches. This is an unclassified briefing, but I will give you some real examples as we go through here. And today's interaction is one-way initiated. There isn't any reason at all why we can't have a two-way interaction with our information space. The algorithms today, as you saw earlier, we can cluster and determine what the key themes are. We can identify what the trends are. We can identify what the people are, what the places are inside the information spaces. Why is it that when we walk up to our information space, we just say, you know, I'm interested in this, and for the next 2 minutes, you just learn what's in your information space? Because quite frankly, several of you developed algorithms in order to be able to do some of that. We've just not presented it in a way to where we can start a discourse for discovery in our information space. And so we're funding several projects now in order to try to invent what a discourse of discovery might look like. That's going to be a two-way initiated interaction between you and your information space. And there's lots of other examples out there in terms of how much information is becoming available out there. This happens a lot, you know. Does this look like your office? You know, at 3,000 articles per day, it doesn't take many days. A lot of times when I'm doing analysis, what I'll see is something like this.
Look, check this out. So, well,
analysis just doesn't happen by looking at data. Data always changes. Data is always coming in. Everything that you're going to see when we get into the analytical spaces has to happen in real time. And so your perceptions of what's there, the relationships that are in your information space, all have to change because the information is coming in at an incredible rate, and you have to be able to deal with this, both mathematically and conceptually. Quite frankly, I think mathematically is the easiest part of this equation. And I'm going to talk a little bit about when we had to implement tools that are being used in real time now in some of our agencies. Okay. Today, when you go up to an information space, typically what you do is you do one Boolean query, then you do another Boolean query, then you do another Boolean query, and after several of those, you kind of get a feel for what's there. Two of the main issues to where I've changed national policy, it's been when I've discovered what wasn't there. Yeah? And you have no chance of identifying, you know, you can do a search, and you can keep doing this whole Boolean search game forever, and you might get a feel for what's there. You will never get a feel for what isn't there. And, you know, I'll give you a couple examples as we go through here where we're identifying what wasn't there. Or a change of terms. We were talking about change of terms earlier. One of the examples, we're monitoring a particular country. We're looking at all science, open literature publications. We're looking at, and you also use the word laser in one of your applications. We're using laser to see you, because laser is a special technique used to produce special materials of one type or another. And in this example, we analyzed about a 30-year time period of a particular country, and we were looking at how they were developing the technology, who they were partnering with, just looking at their publications. And about the 15th year into that, they changed the way they used the word laser to something different. It's kind of an interesting indicator. 18 years into that, they stopped their publications completely. Okay? And that's when they knew what to do and how to do it, and 2 years later, they proved it with an experiment. Okay, but we were able to predict what they were about to do 2 years before they actually did it. Now, you can see the same characteristics if you go out and do patent analysis. You can do that. It's almost characteristic in all patent strategies. You'll have an industry. This is a common technique that I've used to where you look at patents, and you'll have a core patent. Then you'll have all the defending patents around it. Companies will put up defending patents. And then just before products come out, you will see a clear decline, if not a complete stop, in that patent strategy, because that's when they're getting ready to introduce products. The same characteristic, it's the lack of information. You have to discover what is there, and you have to discover what isn't there. You're going to have to approach your information spaces differently. You're going to have to approach your information spaces by, you know, I think this may be happening, coming up with a hypothesis. And the tool that's being used now, we started out with some really classic graphic that we got several publications out of that didn't work at all. And one of our analysts, the end users, came up with the idea of, well, let's put it in a spreadsheet to where each of these are hypotheses, and these are pieces of large documents that have critical evidence, and if it supports it, you get a check. If it refutes it, you get a little circle, and then you can see all the evidence marshaling between looking at different types of hypotheses. So we're looking at different types of discourses in order to do this. Now, while I'm going through this, think about the mathematics that's going to have to be done underlying this. Think about how your information spaces are going to have to be structured. And speaking of that, here's an example I'll share with you. This is the DC sniper. How many of you remember the DC sniper? Remember that situation? Hopefully none of you were there, because that was a bit spooky. I was. And they're using a tool which commands about 90% of the law enforcement market worldwide. This is called Analyst Notebook. Okay, and all Analyst Notebook does is draws nice charts, nice structured diagrams of evidence. Okay, such that you have a person made these phone calls. And you can have pictures of people, you can have email traffic logs and things like that. You develop these nice structured diagrams. What really happened was they put up a command center, and they draw these nice structured diagrams of all their evidence. And typically what a law enforcement agency will do is they'll just poster them all along the wall. So everybody kind of gets a feel for what the evidence of the situation is. Remember the white van clue? Remember the white van clue? You know? All that evidence just changed, that structure changed. Okay, now this nice evidential structure that we thought was there, it wasn't really that there. Drawing this nice social network and structural diagram didn't do it. And then remember that it was that phone call that came from Atlanta to where there was a half of a fingerprint from that shooting, and it was traced up over to Seattle. And then we had a whole different view for the car. You know, that car was stopped 7 times in D.C., but we didn't know what to look for. But as soon as we had that piece, everything changed. So when we think about these nice structures that we built, mathematically and through reasoning, that's really not what we've got. We need a different type of mathematical and semantic representations for our information structures, to where you can say, well, what is your impression of what's going on? How can we rechange and reformulate these relationships? These relationships may change over time. They will change over time. So we need a very different mathematical underpinning than what we have today. We're not just looking for what may be happening. What we're looking for is the ability to do prediction. Here's an example. This was an analysis that I did of Castro speeches. I don't recommend you do that. They're all out on the web. They're all in English. And this man can talk. It's kind of like better not. Here's his rhetoric over a period of time. Maybe a little hard to see. You know, this is a very dark projector. See what his topics were over time. And we'll talk about how this is formulated in a few minutes. And if you look at, here's his discussion of oil. He calls us Yankees and imperialists. And this was where he confiscated our oil refineries. And the two key themes in this information space were cooperatives and cane. From Cuba, what would that be? That's it, sugar cane. So it's number one cash crop. Okay? It took me 5 minutes to figure out what was going on. What was going on here was he was taking the females out of his sugarcane crop, and he had a major social problem to deal with. Okay, so all of a sudden he had this big social problem, and that was the main clue that we completely missed when he confiscated our oil refineries. There's classified examples that I can't talk about where we didn't miss it, because they used visuals like this. But what we're trying to do is, this is a very high-dimensional space. You don't know what the key themes are. You have to see them all. And you have to see them all as they evolve over time. Because pace and velocity in your information space are key indicators. You know, we really haven't thought about that very much in terms of pace and velocity of our information space. I encourage you to think about that. And of course, you don't get to work with just text. You have to deal with financial. We're doing a lot of work now on transaction analytics. Transaction analytics is financial. It's emails where you've got a source, you've got a target, and you've got a little message that goes from point A to point B. You know, it's not, I've been working in this text analysis for, I think for 2 decades, and I hear I had all this body of text, and co-occurrence of words, and I can generate meanings within clusters, and you don't have that in transactions. But you've got billions of them. So how do you take advantage of the opportunity within billions of information units in order to generate an understanding of what's going on? And as you'll see from our financial partners as we go through this, they're keenly interested in this. You have to do this with images, you have to do this with video, you have to do it with audio. And imagine yourself in 5 years being a police sergeant here in LA and the type of tools they're going to have. They're going to have probably not something like this. They'll probably more than likely have something like an iPod. And it's going to have geographical information. They're going to be able to get information from a lot of different sources, all right on a mobile platform. So it's going to be a very different type of an environment. And we'll talk a little bit about more of some of those. Here's a really interesting little book. This is a little book, and you can buy it on the web and you can get it. It's a little pamphlet almost on critical thinking. And it really changed what I was thinking at the time when I started up this. And when people make critical decisions, when they're really trying to analyze information, you know, if you're going to make a decision about your spouse that now has just been diagnosed with cancer, you're going to want to know everything you can about it. You're going to want to know other cases of individuals who had similar things, and you're going to want to compare it. You're going to want to compare different medications. You're going to want to do this. Okay, what are the things that you're going to be thinking about? Well, you're going to be thinking, it's easy, quite frankly, to get the information. What is the real question? How can you articulate it? Why are you doing it? What are different points of view in terms of how do you look at all of this information space? The implications and the consequences of taking one particular medical remedy for another. This is one that's almost always left off. What are your assumptions? Oh, you didn't say you're looking at a 20-year-old female. That's a fundamental different assumption as opposed to my wife. I'm not going to go there either. And so in terms of assumptions, but it changes your concept here. How many of our information analytic tools take this into account to where you can see that when you're trying to make decisions? None. And yet this is how the human mind works. Well, we need to bring that information forward in a method that matches how the human mind works. Okay, and that's partly what visual analytics is about. There's a really interesting book. If you've not read this book, you can go out and do a search on intelligence analysis. It'll come up with the homepage for the CIA, and you can download this book. It talks about the psychology of intelligence analysis. It talks, quite frankly, about our failures in terms of we've not discovered what's in our information spaces and some remedies in terms of how we need to change the analytical methodology for how we approach information. And they're serious about that change. So, first of all, scale has changed, and I'll give you some references here in a minute. George Robinson from Microsoft and Ken Joy from down here in California did a really good job of describing scale. You know, our interaction today in terms of the point and click and identifying one thing has got to change. We've got to be able to communicate in concepts with a discourse. And this next phrase came up from one of our key industrial sponsors, that the next generation information products will be distinguished by their ability to facilitate data to decision. Now, it's when we get all of this data, and whoever can build the best information products, whether it's Google, whether it's Microsoft, whether it's Oracle, whoever can produce the information products and the method by which you can make decisions are going to be the winners. It's no longer megaflops. It's no longer bandwidths. Okay? And just searching for information isn't enough. I think that's one of the reasons why you're having this focus this week. Searching for information isn't enough. It's what are we going to do with it? And we've been able to envision the possibility of a new science, a new suite of technologies. That's what's really stimulated about $100 million worth of research going into this now. What's the core concept, the proof of principle? And I hadn't planned on going much through this, but there's probably going to be a lot of questions on this. When we first started this, I was challenged. I was doing nice genetic engineering. I was using 7-10 dimensional visual analytics to do this. with nice solid science foundation. And two folks came to the lab and said, could you do this for text? And I looked at them and said, you gotta be kidding. And no, so that started out. However, they had some restrictions. They wouldn't let us use any AI technology because they invested several hundred million in AI and did expert systems just didn't do it for them. We couldn't have anybody edit the text, raw text. Anything they decided to give us in any format, we had to be able to analyze. Whether it was faxes, whether it was in multiple languages, that poses some different constraints in terms of how you put your mathematics together in order to do something like this. So basically, we take a text document, we produce a mathematical signature, and you've been, sounds like you've been talking about the different ways of producing these mathematical signatures, so I'm not going to go into that. I will go into one of the key values is not counting words, the bag of words tricks. That's not it. Word co-occurrence, though, works marvelously well. Word co-occurrence, actually, each word is defined by the words around it. It solves the problem of word trends, okay? It solves the problem of misspelling, okay? And it works equally well for spoken as it does for written text. It comes with the natural language processing in terms of how we do that. But you can do all of that with statistics, and you can scale. So that's a word we're relying a lot on word co-occurrence to define this, okay? And then you map this into a high-dimensional space, much like what you've been talking about. There's lots of approaches to do this, and then you do some clustering on this. And then you do the dimensionality reduction, which you've probably talked about many ways to do dimensionality reduction down into a view space. When we first started this, you know, so two documents together, or two documents close in space are close together in a thematic way. Okay, when I first started this, I was very naive, to say the least. I didn't think we could put many documents up and have people do serious analysis with this. Here's an information space with 750,000 Medline abstracts. The doctor solved his problem in less than 10 minutes to where he was looking for a correlation between a breast cancer and a medication treatment just by looking at the large clusters and how they related to each other. I was astounded at how well the human mind works. The human mind also works very well at scale, okay? Where you look at an individual document, you can look at document clusters. This is a thematic landscape that allows you to look at your total information space. To where, and you'll see some of this, and I can actually run the tool here, yeah.
Do you create summaries in each of these little clusters of documents?
In a way you create summaries, but it's not really formal summarization. There's a whole field of summarization science that's out there. So we don't really do that. The natural clustering just brings together things that are similar.
But then when the doctor is looking at the representation,
right.
How would you know what each cluster is about?
It was a he, and all, and what they do. Actually, I've got a couple of short movie clips that I'll show you, in terms of how it works. Okay, and it's not just looking at a picture, not at all. It's the interaction that counts, in terms of people have to be able to interact in a high dimensional and this whole issue of a dimensionality reduction. It's the action, the discourse, is where they make their discoveries. Okay. This is a key capability because it allows you, when you walk up into your information space, no matter how large it is, because it's scale independent, to where you can see a landscape of all of your information, all the key topics, how the topics relate to each other. You do one, by the way, on the news, and you'll see Larry King Live completely separate over here from all over news briefs, by the way, because Larry King Live talks differently than everybody else in the news, and statistical patterns will show that. It's really interesting. And people work across different scales simultaneously. When you watch people as they're using this, we spent probably two years coming up with the methodologies and the techniques to come up with the best words for these clusters and the best wording on the themes. And it's not just the most frequently used words, you have to use the most distinguishing words within there. And so you've really got to be careful when you do this. And then, of course, you want to look at how theme changes over time. It's a key part of this pace in your information space. So you watch them look at different levels of abstraction. How many levels of abstraction do you do in information spaces? When I was working in the genome area, I had 6 levels of abstraction. Here we've only got 3. You know, what's the science of how the human mind works in terms of complexity of information? We don't know that. I'm hoping that some folks will invent some of that so we can get a better understanding of that. Mm-hmm. And of course, the speed of things is always critical. Now, the next thing may be here's just some of the techniques. We had produced a short video for another congressional briefing. And just some of the things that's going to be demonstrated. This is going to go by real fast. And so let's just start it out. This is a search using Google. I understand the next speaker is from Google. So this ought to be interesting. In this case, there's 140 million documents. We picked out a smaller subset to work on. I think we were doing a search on Olympics. So it's tied together with all your popular search engines, so you can do this in real time. And deal with 1 to 5,000 documents on a PC with no special hardware is kind of the goal, with about 10,000 users simultaneously. That's what we're running today. And so each document is automatically grouped together, you know, using some of the fine math that you folks have developed. It's not rocket science. Notice here how they've grabbed a hold of a small group and put it down here in a temporary space and then reclustered. This is an absolutely critical technique, because when you go in an information space, you want to take out what you know and just put it in a temporary space, and yet still have it active, and then put it back in, because you're trying to discover the relationships in your information space. And so this act of taking things out temporarily, putting them back in, is actually designed by a couple of intelligence analysis. And it's used all the time. So you can look at cluster themes, you can, you know, all the traditional stuff that you'd expect to be able to do something like this. There's a lot of tricks whenever you look at a document. It puts a little X to note that you've looked at it. A lot of the analytical maintenance when you go through here is illustrated here. What's coming on next? Of course, you can do the zooming and the panning and all that traditional graphic stuff. Searches. You can do direct word searches. However, the proximity search that was alluded to earlier in the previous conversation, you take a document and you want to see which ones are closer to it. It's used all the time. You take a paragraph. In the legal industry, of course, everything is defined by precedence. So you take a paragraph out of one case and then you see all the other cases that have something similar to it. And then you want to be able to identify what are the words that are related to that, very similar to what you did in by hand where you did the color. We did the same thing. It's just implemented in the software where all the key words that indicated your indicator, you know, are highlighted right here. So it's a great technique. You know, it works automatically as well. But you have to be able to have little tricks by where you can go to the next one and do this. What's next? Different languages. As long as you do the mathematics in the native language, you're okay before you do translation. So we've got 14 different languages here. The mathematics work marvelously across multiple languages as long as you do it in the native language, and then use your typical translator in order to do that. Here we're doing different types of queries. We can do queries in the native language. We can do translations across to go back and forth. The real-time updating we have, that was a major challenge to us, because if you've got these clusters of information space and you've got 1,000 items coming at you every couple of minutes, which is typical of when you get a hot situation, that's what you've got, is 1,000 items coming at you, and you've got this information space, I can assure you, you're going to be overwhelmed. Mathematically, I can do it. Cognitively, it's really hard. The analyst has to be in charge of that. And here we keep track of evidence, the quality of evidence, how do you create evidence, and how do you remember what was good and what wasn't good. This has to be changeable, as we discussed before. We also do affect, so we can detect emotion in terms of if President Bush comes out with a statement, what's the public opinion? That one's pretty easy. And do all the typical clustering, and you can overlay on top of GIS stuff and that type. That's kind of the, so here we were doing an analysis on all the news that came across. And you can do this in real time on a news wall. So you can set up these triage networks to where you can do real time news monitoring and get opinions, see what's going on. And we produce synthetic data sets. These are open for you too, and available for you. I think I'll stop this video here. Part of the NVAC program is to produce data sets with known threats in them. Okay, so you can try out your algorithms. You can try these out. Eventually, I'm going to give out the compiler that we're doing. Because what I want to do, my vision here is that I want scientists to be able to analyze their science that they're working on very early in the game. Don't wait until you've done your first 5 publications of it. I want you to be able to look at a problem that's very close to real. And since there's no magic gold standard in your information spaces, eventually we'll give out the compiler we're doing. Basically, we've developed the language to define threats, and then we produce an intermediate language for all of, I don't think there's many computer scientists here. Then you produce an intermediate language. Instead of code, we produce synthetic data, mostly using real data. There's a real art of hiding clues in there. So we've done 8 of these. They're available. There's actually an international contest that's held now per year. And so you're welcome to participate in the contest or get a hold of the information spaces that are being used for the contest. They're usually murder mysteries or something like that, in terms of one of them's dealing with a cult, one of them's dealing with the city mayor that got in problems, and they're kind of fun mysteries. But they've got lots of information, they've got blogs, they've got maps, they've got all different types of information in there, so I encourage that. Uses today of the Inspire tool that we've been talking about, here's some of the uses, and I don't think we need to go into that anymore. And as I mentioned when I talked at NSF, I gave a very similar talk but really focused on systems biology. Let's talk a little bit more about the core definition and where we're going with this. Visual analytics is the science of analytics. The rest of this definition is people use it to synthesize information and derive insight from masses, dynamic, ambiguous, and often conflicting data. This is the phrase that I coined when I was sitting back at DHS as one of their science advisors, trying to start a whole series of programs in addition to this one. And we've not talked about this one, but we're going to spend quite a bit of time talking about that. So there's a whole new suite of technology that's going to be embedded around being able to communicate effectively with individuals as opposed to with PowerPoint and with Word documents. We need to change that. So what have we started? On March 26th of 2004, we were commissioned to start this NVAC. The reason I remember that is that's my birthday, so it's quite a birthday present. And so I started leading these centers. I knew I had to change how we in the visualization community were thinking, so I put together a team of about 40 experts, both in visualization as well as analysts, regional folks dealing with dealing from the a regional police force, for example, the investigative units. And we wrote this book about what's required in a new area of science. The National Science Foundation has grabbed a hold of this, and we ended up producing a video about how do you start a new area in science. So it's been one of the few new things that have actually really started as a result of from need. So the book is available. If you'll give me a business card or somehow your address or send me an email, I'll send you a copy of the book. It's into its 3rd reprinting. I don't get any royalty rights on it. You know, this was all done for the government, so I can make sure you get a copy of the book. And it has been the basis for the NSF program that is starting up. When I started this program, I knew that I had to fund universities because the current thinking of most traditional visualization folks wasn't sufficient. So I started up 5 university-led research centers. The first one is at Stanford, led by Pat Hanrahan. Each one of these have focuses, and some of you are working on some of these focuses, so it might be worthwhile for me to mention these. Pat Hanrahan, for example, is working on network analytics. Okay, he's working on transaction analytics and network analytics. He's done some really cool work in flow, where you're looking at the flow of network traffic to do that type of analytics. Very nice work. UNCC and Georgia Tech, their primary partner is the Bank of America on financial analytics. Okay, and Bank of America is so excited about that, they've opened up 2 offices for us to work full-time inside of their bank. When I started looking at what international financial transactions were like, I was really surprised. Some of your text analysis, freeform text analysis, could be used, as well as our stuff on international bank transactions. These are not nicely structured transactions. They're freeform. They're keyword, not even keyword driven, because they use so many different words to mean the same thing. It's an incredibly complex problem. And Penn State is probably one of the leading university teams working on geospatial analytics, and they have formed a partnership with the New York Port Authority. Purdue in medical analytics, clearly all of this that we're working has strong medical implications. And then University of Washington with the they're working on collaborative analytics within within rooms as well as all the way across continents, dealing with Australia and New Zealand. And as I mentioned to the Canadian folks, it's about 6 weeks ago, I had the experience of helping to write a treaty between two countries. Now, many of you have written science articles and turned them in to get patents. Now, when the patent lawyer returns you something, and you look at it and say, did I write that? Well, that's what happened with this treaty. A colleague and I from Canada wrote up this treaty that we wanted to put together. They put it in the legal system, and it came back, and it was gobbledygook. But it did pass both the legal departments within our State Department now, as well as the Canadian State Department, so it's working its way through. That will be establishing 2 to 5 CVACs, Canadian Visual Analytics Centers, up in Canada. As I mentioned, the European National Science Foundation just started their visual analytics program. It's being led by the University of Constance by Daniel Keim. It's a 6-year program, so I'm on their advisory board, so we're looking for that collaboration. So we're looking for a strong growth here. And once again, I want to remind you that there's an open call with a heavy emphasis on mathematics. Now, Peter helped do this with a workshop that he came to. There's a heavy emphasis on the mathematical foundations for how do you do visual analytics. If you've not referenced the call, what's out there is we want to set up 1, maybe 2 National Science Foundation visualization and analytics centers. Okay, it'll depend on how the money actually shakes out when we give out the awards, as well as anywhere from 5 to 15 individual PI grants of 100 to 200K. The reason we're doing it this way is, one, I have to be able to have the coordination that's going to take place. By the way, the money doesn't come through me. The money's going to come through NSF. So please, guys, don't come to me. The money's not going to come through me on this one, although I'm funding the rest of this enterprise now. NSF is going to do their own call. I'll help them. I help write the call. And we had strong mathematical input. I encourage you to look at that. There's going to be opportunities. And the reason that we staged it with one center and multiple individual PI grants is next year we want that to grow significantly. I can't talk about the internal NSF plans other than to say their plans are to almost quadruple the budget. What's there from what it is out there today. So there's some interesting opportunities for you folks to go after. 5 things that I have to deliver. What am I responsible for? First, I'm responsible for delivering visual analytics technology to reduce the threat of terrorism. This is serious stuff. Our adversaries are smart, and things that we do, we see a response right away. And so it's a very challenging effort. We need to understand our vulnerabilities of our critical infrastructures, and I'm going to show you some graph structures here in just a minute. I've got to watch my time here. Communication for first responders doing mobile analytics. People are going to be using devices like this in the field to do analysis. And where do you do the mathematics for that? What mathematics do you actually do? What's appropriate to do on devices like this? Because people are going to try it. So we've got to help them out a little bit in terms of what they ought to be doing. This whole issue of communication, this became a whole chapter in the book, chapter 5 in the book, is how do we effectively communicate? When we send a message, like for example, if I collect a bunch of information about my spouse who might have breast cancer, I want to know what's the evidence behind there. I want to know what's the reasoning behind this information assessment. Right now you can't do that within Word or within PowerPoint. And so you want the reasoning in there, you want the logic in there, you want that to be active, and you want those to be unwrappable packages where you can dive down into that. And oh, by the way, you might have some key piece of information that you want to put in that logic framework, and then you want to see what happens. So you're going to see a whole new field of effort, I won't say a field of study, on dynamic and active products and how do you go producing this. And the major information providers are keenly interested in that in terms of how to do that. So we're partnering with several of those folks. And the last one I wrote in, I want to produce an enduring talent base, which allows me to fund universities and have students. I fund programs to where I have students up at the lab all the time. I'm supporting 2 sabbaticals now of major PIs around the country coming to our lab. If you've got students that you'd like to send up, love to have them. You know, it's a good environment. It's pretty dynamic. We got a lot of real problems. We're not going to talk about the organization that I set up. The book, strongly recommend that you read through this, but focus your attention right here. How do you represent mathematically information? How do you transform information? How do you turn data into knowledge? You don't do that just by a mathematical transformation. You also have to include semantics. So how can you partner with your semantics folks at your universities in order to come up with new ways for creating these high-dimensional data representations, okay, to where the structure can actually flux based upon what's going on in the situation that you have. So we talk about kind of the current state of the art and where we ought to be making investments in there. So I strongly encourage you to look at that. The interest worldwide, I think I've covered that. These are just the people that have been accessing our website. We've got this little tool that allows you to keep track of everybody who's been looking at the website. Our partners that we have, twice a year we do a consortium. We've got another consortium coming up in November. I'd welcome to have some more participation. I do keep these small, though. This is industrial funded, so I do keep these small in terms of these consortiums, but they're very good times to meet the government folks that you might want to meet who would be funding research, as well as the applied folks who have the real problems to solve. We have both those folks that come. Get a hold of me. You can access the NVAC website, and you can find out about that. I recommend you contact me directly if there's any problem, if we're filled up already. I try to keep these meetings under 125 people. Technologies. We've got about 2 minutes left. We've noticed this piece of technology. I think we've talked about that enough. And the version of this, which I didn't think was such a big advance, but the version of this on a power wall, it's a very large wall on your screen, such that analysts can see everything that's going on in their information feeds in real time. For example, we did a meeting in Seattle and we had 25 news feeds all coming in, all at once, all being analyzed in real time. So you could see what any key topics were. They'd come out right away if something was happening. You could see, and the news is probably going to be the first one that's going to see all this. And so, and it works very comfortably. This is actually just part of the Inspire system. And so it works quite well. I'm surprised. We have to install 8 of these this year. We're doing the mobile analytics that I mentioned, and that's a real challenge. How do you do the mathematics and how do you do the visual representations on mobile devices? How do you develop analytical scenarios, narrative scenarios of what might be happening? How do you talk about prediction? How do you talk about intent? And how do you represent that? Okay, and it's not at all straightforward how to do that. How to deal with large graph structures. This is something that you definitely relate to. You simply cannot draw all the large graph structures. You can't do it. We've got to find new mathematical representations for complex graph structures. In this case, we wanted to be able to look at the entire West Coast and East Coast power grids, do this in real time. It amounts to about 1 million nodes and about 5 million links. And we had to get away from the traditional way of representing graphs to where we came up with a mathematical signature for subgraphs. And this is running on a PC now, and you can see all of these nodes in real time, dynamically moving based upon whatever the transactions happen to be. And so Pak Wong at our laboratory is the one who invented that. You'll see several papers coming out in the near future on how to deal with very large graph structures and have them run on PCs. The threat stream generator we talked about. We've got some interesting toys where you can have workaround tables with teams. That's fun. Students, love to have students come up to the lab. There's also programs at DHS that can fund students. There's programs at DHS that will fund university professors to come visit us. If you're interested, give me a call or contact university programs at DHS. Some of the cool work that our partners are doing, obviously there's a whole technological foundation here that we're hoping to build. At UNCC, they're focusing on video analytics, how you analyze masses of video, as well as image, as well as the financial analytics. All three of them have major challenges, and they're making great progress. Each of these, by the way, have to form interdisciplinary teams. So they have to find a mathematician and a statistician that they're going to get to know and work with them, or they don't get funded. You know, in order for me to invent and build an Aspire system, I've got mathematicians, I've got cognitive science folks, I've got knowledge engineers, I've got software engineers, really crosses the gamut of interdisciplinary science. You just have to work in that mode to do this. If you're interested in teaching or something like that, we've created a digital library out at Georgia Tech in terms of the teaching materials. We're coming up with a curriculum, and schools are going to start offering advanced degrees in visual analytics. So we're most excited about that. That'll take some time. The geospatial analytics, the folks at the Northeastern up at Penn State, Parvac is working in a virtual reality or augmented reality forum where you can look at cities and see cars and buses move around there in teams of people to make decisions. And then the Stanford work on transactional analytics, Purdue work on mobile analytics and medical healthcare in terms of what they're doing. Here's an example, science products. I'll refer you to this conference, the Visual Analytics Science and Technology Conference. It's going to be held in Sacramento this fall, just around Thanksgiving. This has started such that IEEE is fully supporting this visual analytics thrust. Encourage you to, if you get to come. I've also started several special issues of other journals to make sure that our research staffs have places to where they can publish theirs. So we started out with a CGNA issue. We've done transactions issues, international conferences, here's the BAS conference. So this is in Sacramento the last few days of October, first day of that's Halloween. Good choice. So I encourage you to go there. So in summary, visual analytics is an opportunity worth considering. It is a practice of interdisciplinary science, though. You can't do this by yourself in an office. You've got to go form teams of these interdisciplinary folks in order to do it. I've got two artists on my staff. They have a huge impact on what I do. I've got a digital designer on my staff in order to help me do things with what we do. Especially with the interaction of information in terms of how are we going to go about doing this. And it applies to virtually all aspects of society. This isn't about homeland security. So that's why NSF is doing it. That's why the European National Science Foundation is going to put money into this. And for each of you, my concluding slide is the best is yet to come. So we're just getting this started. So with that, I'll open it up for questions and comments.